Welcome to Straight Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not just what to think. This is Average Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples and physicist Dave Rogstad. On today's podcast, do you know how to respond to the deductive problem of evil? Ken, many people would say that the problem of evil represents the biggest challenge to the Christian faith. You'd like to lay out the problem as presented by a formidable atheist and then kind of dig in from there.
Yeah, Joe, that's right. It seems to me that the problem of evil never goes away. It's a perennial challenge. Even in the early church, there were questions about how does God's power in creation, his goodness, relate to evil. I thought we would explore a particular atheist that has raised this challenge and talk a little bit about him and his ideas and how we might respond to him.
Okay, looking forward to it. And I was pleased to see the notes that you provided us here with some background on this particular atheist, because I had heard you talk about him before, but I didn't realize how prominent he was in the atheistic worldview.
Yeah, you know, one of the points that I make, I say this in the introduction of my new manuscript. My new manuscript answers objections largely that atheists give, and particularly challenges that come from the new atheists. You know, people like Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, Richard Dawkins. And I have long thought that the old atheists are more formidable than the new atheists. And what I mean by that is I think that there were atheists before this new select group of infidels, if you will. There were old atheists, and I think that they were more formidable, Joe, because I think they had to study Christianity. They lived at a time in which Christianity was very influential. So whether they agreed with it or liked it, they had to study it. But I think these older atheists, too, they're more aware of Christianity and thus able to detect some of the areas that may be controversial. Moreover, they were more willing to engage in argumentation than rhetoric. And one of the old atheists that I have often thought was very formidable is a man named J.L. Mackey, spelled M-A-C-K-I-E. Mackey's dates are, he's born in 1917, died in 1981. And one of his books that is still very popular, used in many classes relating to the philosophy of religion, is called The Miracle of Theism. Came out right after his death in 1982. A little bit about Mackey himself. He was an Australian philosopher, but ultimately ended up teaching at Oxford. He was a World War II veteran, and he was very interesting from the standpoint of ethics, Joe and Dave, because he has a comment in The Miracle of Theism where he says that if objective morality existed, it would be so strange that probably the only way you could account for it would be that it comes from God, that God created it or God was behind it. So he bit the bullet, so to speak, and said, I don't believe in objective morality. Mm. So he was an atheist who said, look, if God doesn't exist, I see no reason to think that objective morality exists. Now, a lot of atheists today want to retain objective morality, but I think they have to work really hard, and I'm not sure they have ever succeeded in grounding it, get why there is an objective morality if God does not exist. I'm not the only one who considered Mackey formidable. I noticed that Time magazine in 1980 called him, quote, one of the ablest of today's atheistic philosophers. And of course, Mackey's challenge was met by some of the best Christian philosophers. I would consider Richard Swinburne and Alvin Plantinga two of the not only two of the finest Christian philosophers, but actually two of the greatest philosophers living today. Our listeners have heard me mention Swinburne and Plantica, and I'll talk more about them as we go forward. So that's a little bit of a background. Any questions from you guys about Mackey's background before we dive into the content?
No, I think you've given us some good biographical material on him. So,
okay. I'm ready to go. Well, in the late 50s, he wrote a paper, and this comes out in other writings by him, but Mackey raises the question of the deductive problem of evil. And what we mean by that is it possible, deductive reasoning is different than inductive or abductive reasoning. In inductive reasoning, we reason to a conclusion that follows probably. With abduction, that's best explanation reasoning, so the best you get is plausibility. But there is the formal reasoning in logic where you seek certainly true conclusions. And of course, what's great if you do a deductive reasoning properly, if you engage in deductive reasoning properly, you can arrive at certainly true conclusions. So, you know, the standard example in every philosophy class is all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. Well, if it's true that all men are mortal and Socrates is one of those men, then it follows with certainty that he's mortal. Well, Mackey attempts to do something like that with the problem of evil. And he essentially raises three points. He says, for example, if God exists, as of course Christian theists think that he does, then you can argue that God is omnipotent. He's all powerful. You can argue that he is wholly good, maybe omnibenevolent, however you'd like to use that term. And then the third would be evil exists. So those are kind of those three core ideas that God is all powerful, omnipotent. God is wholly good, omnibenevolent, and evil exists. And Mackey says that logically, you can't have two of these without conflict with the other. So he would reason, for example, that if God is all powerful, he would have the ability to get rid of evil. And if he's all good, he would have the motivation. So God can't be all powerful and all good and evil exist. Now, you can have two of these, according to Mackey, without the third. For example, you might say God is all powerful and he exists, but he's not good. And you could flip it. You could say God is all good and evil could exist. Maybe he wants to get rid of evil, but he doesn't have the power. There are people who advocate that position, for example. So Mackey is essentially telling us here that with these three propositions, and maybe if you're listening at home, maybe you want to write them down, just jot them down so you can kind of follow. So one would be God is omnipotent. Two, God is good, wholly good. And three, evil exists. So Mackey is arguing there is a logical tension with having those three. And again, the reasoning in his mind is if God is all powerful, he can do anything he wants. So he's got the power, and I'm pointing at my bicep right now. He's got the power, right? He can do anything he wants. And if he's wholly good, well, how would you ever have a good God that wouldn't want to eliminate evil? I'm not all that good a human being, and I want to get rid of evil. So Mackey would say that if God has the power to get rid of evil, and if he has the intent because he's wholly good, then evil shouldn't exist. But evil does exist. And therefore you have this logical tension. You have this conflict. And I think it's helpful to think about it this way, because this is probably the strongest form of the problem of evil, called again, the deductive problem of evil. Now, Christians, of course, have been dealing with this issue for many centuries. I mean, a little later, I'm going to give you some quotations from St. Augustine. I think one of Augustine's most important contributions is his framing of the problem of evil. And there have been others who have taken up this issue all the way to today. Alvin Plantinga wrote a book in the 1970s entitled God, Freedom, and Evil. And of course, I think that this is the major criticism of God. There are others. In our next show, I'm going to raise another issue that's raised by atheists. But I think that this is central. Now, in looking at this tension that we have in this three-part statements, Mackie wants to add some qualifications. So now we're going to add two more statements. So first we got God is omnipotent, two, God is good, three, evil exists. Now he's going to add two qualifications because there is the question of what does it mean for someone, or what does it mean for God to be all-powerful, omnipotent? Does it mean he can do anything he wants? And then what does it mean for God to be benevolent or good? So those two qualifications, the first one would say, if something is omnipotent, it can do anything. So he's now qualifying his first statement that God is omnipotent. He's going to interpret that as God can do anything. And with regard to God being wholly good, he's going to qualify that. He's going to say, if something is wholly good, it always eliminates evil as much evil as it can. It always eliminates as much evil as it can. Now, again, what Mackie is attempting to do here, I think, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, I'm going to try to present his argument in the best sense. I'm going to try to take his argument in the best sense, rather than kind of attributing to him, false motives or wiggling around things or weaseling around things. I'm not going to do that. I respect Mackie, and I think he's raised a serious challenge. So I think what he's trying to do here, Dave and Joe, is he's trying to show that really you can't, if you've got an omnipotent God and you've got a benevolent God, you can't have evil. You can take one of them out. God can be all powerful and evil could exist, or God could be omnipotent and God would and evil could exist, but you can't have all three. And I think he wants to qualify omnipotence and benevolence to, again, try to read those in the most natural sense. So for Mackie, omnipotence really does mean that God can do anything. And for God to be benevolent, it means that a benevolent being, whether it's you or me or God, they would eliminate evil as much as it can. Mm-hmm. So that's the tension. That's the deductive tension. With deduction, you have contradiction. If God is all powerful and God is all good, he would have both the power and the motive to get rid of evil. But here's the problem. Evil still exists. So in Mackie's mind, God doesn't. An all-powerful and an omnibenevolent God cannot exist because the three of those ideas cannot exist at the same time. Yeah. Now okay. Let me stop there and see if you want to interact a little bit.
I wanted to ask a question. In his statement that if God is wholly good, he will eliminate evil as much as he can. So he's saying he will do as much as he can, but then he adds to that that God can do anything. So is he meaning then that he could eliminate evil totally?
Yes. I think the way to kind of think about it a little bit is that if God is all powerful, then he doesn't have any restraints.
No limitations.
He has no limitations or boundaries. He can do anything. And he also wants to carefully define. He thinks you have to take these issues very seriously. And omnipotence means the power to do anything and everything. And goodness or benevolence means that's the opposite of evil. If you're good, that's the very opposite of evil. So to be good by nature, you would have to try to get rid of as much of it as you could. So what he is saying here is that Christians kind of want to weasel around these ideas. They want to make these qualifications. But for him, he thinks omnipotence means God can do anything. And omnibenevolence means that he will. He has to. And therefore, he's trying to draw that tension. You can't have a good God and an all-powerful God if there's evil. If there's evil, it all breaks down. And therefore, the best conclusion is an all-good, all-powerful God does not exist. And he's done it deductively. At least he's trying to do it deductively.
Yeah. Ken, I don't know if this is necessary for people who listen to this podcast, but because you raised the issue of the new atheists earlier, maybe I'll bring it up. You have a lot of respect for Mackey, as do a lot of Christian philosophers. So he's not playing any games here when he talks about the nature of the Christian God as he understands it. Because sometimes you hear the objection somewhere at this point that, well, can God lie, or can God make a square circle, or make a rock so heavy he can't lift it? Sometimes people kind of go off on those tangents, but Mackey isn't doing that at all. When he says God is omnibenevolent and all-powerful, omnipotent, he understands what Christians mean by that. Is that correct?
That's a great question, Joe. I think that he does, but I think that he wants to I think he wants to engage what Christians will say about omnipotence and omnibenevolence, but he always wants to push it back in the strongest form possible. Now, of course, I think I understand the reason he wants to do that, because the more you can make that tension right at the forefront, the more you can pit goodness and evil, and the more you can define all-powerful as he can do anything, then the greater tension that is on having those three ideas meeting together. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to follow Mackey, and other Christians are not going to agree with Mackey, but I do want to state again that I want to state that basic reasoning. So if God is omnibenevolent, you know, he would have the desire to get rid of evil. And if God is all-powerful, he would have the ability. You could also throw in another attribute of God. He's omniscient. So he would know how. So this is kind of using God's attributes, all of his omnis, if you will, right, to get rid of evil. And so, again, the tension of all this is that if you define omnipotence and omnibenevolence the way he does, you got a big problem. Mm-hmm. Now, what have Christians said about this? Well, Christians have developed various forms of theodicies because evil does exist in the world. I don't think there's any doubt about that. There's murder, there's rape, there's robbery. You could even extend the meaning of evil and include natural disasters. I mean, we're still going through a pandemic, and it's killed a couple hundred thousand people in America, around the world even more. Well, evil does exist. So how is it possible to have an all-powerful God who is completely good and yet engage evil? Well, theodicy, Christians have said that that's a way of framing this question that would allow God to be good and all-powerful and yet for evil to exist. Now, one of them is called the greater good theodicy. Greater good is tied to St. Augustine. Let me read one of his quotations here. Here's two from the Enchiridion. On faith, hope, and love, Augustine wrote more than 5 million words. In many ways, I think he is the most important Christian thinker outside of the biblical authors. I say that because his influence both on Catholicism and Protestantism is very strong. I should add, however, that Augustine is not nearly as respected in Eastern Christendom among Eastern Orthodox. They tend to see him as being too pessimistic with his view of original sin, and they're not terribly fond of his kind of views of election and predestination. But nevertheless, here's Augustine's statements from the Enchiridion. He says, God judged it better to bring good out of evil than to suffer no evil to exist. One more time, I want you to hear this. Augustine says, God judged it better to bring good out of evil than to suffer no evil to exist. So the context there is, God is all powerful. God is all loving. He could have created a world, conceivably he could have created a world where there would be no evil. Augustine says, but God judged it better to bring good out of evil than to not allow evil to exist at all. So this is the beginnings of the argument from the greater good. Here's another quotation from the Enchiridion, chapter 11. Augustine says, for the Almighty God, who as even the heathen acknowledge, has supreme power over all things, being himself supremely good, would never permit the existence of anything evil among his works if he were not so omnipotent and good that he can bring good even out of evil. So here we have that greater good idea. Now, let me use, I think, a very powerful example that all Christians can relate to. I would ask you, what is the greatest evil that has ever transpired? What is the greatest evil that has ever existed in the world? What is the greatest miscarriage of justice? Well, could I say that the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, took a human nature, was born into the world, and his mission was from the Father, anointed by the Spirit, so you can never have Jesus without the Trinity. Jesus comes into the world to perform an atonement, a reconciliation. His people reject him, the world rejects him, and he is crucified and punished as an evildoer. You could argue that this is the greatest miscarriage of justice ever, of any conceivable kind. But what happens out of that miscarriage of justice? It appears as if the religious authorities and the Romans have taken authority over Jesus. They've defeated him. His mission has failed. He has been crucified publicly, and he has been killed. But of course, what comes out of that miscarriage of justice? What comes out of that great evil? Salvation for all people who believe the gospel. Yeah. So out of the greatest evil comes the greatest good. So this is one of those theodicies. Now, by the way, it's not the only one, and it's not always the most favored one. For example, many philosophers would suggest that the free will defense is better. For example, Alvin Plantinga would suggest that the problem that you have here is if God is going to create human beings, he has to give them freedom. And the problem with freedom is that if you give them freedom, they may use their freedom to rebel against God. So if you define God goodness as he gets rid of evil, some would suggest if a good God had to get rid of evil, as Mackey suggests here, that if something is wholly good, it always eliminates evil as much as it can. Somebody like Alvin Plantinga would say, then God could never create human beings. Because if he created human beings with choice, they could always exercise that choice. And, you know, so maybe by getting rid of people, you could stop rape and robbery and all of these terrible things, but you have to get rid of all of humanity. And so here is another theodicy. People like Plantico would say that it's not necessarily true that God, being wholly good, would eliminate evil in every possible way that he could. So Augustine might tell us, for example, that God is completely wise. God is omniscient. God is omnipotent. He's all powerful. He's wholly good. And he has a plan. Mm-hmm. And out of evil comes goodness. Now, we can also see this in less dramatic ways than the atonement. You know, I've often said that I like recreation. I like entertainment. I like vacations. But I haven't learned anything really profound from them. The things that I've learned, I think, that are most important in my life, they almost always come through difficulty, through struggle. I remember in 1988, summer of 1988, my wife was coming home from work. She was working at the hospital. She decided to go to a little place to get us some food. And when she came home, we were living at an apartment building in Anaheim at the time. I was working at the Christian Research Institute. Well, when she got out of the car about midnight, because she had worked the late shift at the hospital, a man attacked her. And I remember I was inside the apartment building. Fortunately, it was pretty close to where the parking lot was, but I heard what I thought was a muffled scream. And I kid you not, when I looked at the television ad was, in the moment you're watching this, a woman will be raped. Mm. And I ran outside, and I can't tell you how I felt when that man attacked my wife. It was like an out-of-body experience. I went totally Rambo. Mm. I went after the guy. I grabbed him around the throat and threw him to the ground and started beating on him. We were fighting. And just out of my mind, I was thinking, here I am fighting a man who's attacked my wife in almost utter darkness at midnight. Well, the man was arrested and prosecuted. I have to tell you, my wife did suffer post-traumatic stress. Mm. She was very anxious for a while, as I was. I became even more protective of her. I put my shotgun in front of the front door, Dave. I was serious business. But you know what? I can tell you that out of that experience, it made me more empathetic toward people who were victims. It allowed me to realize that, you know what, when people have very difficult experiences, like a soldier coming back from battle, or somebody being a victim of violent crime, it turns their world upside down. Maybe a better example of this idea, when I was a teenager, 19 years old, my older brother had a lot of problems with drugs and alcohol. He had mental health issues. He was incarcerated. And my brother Frank took his life. And I'll tell you, it just turned our world upside down. What I felt a lot of pain. I felt guilt because I thought, why didn't I try to help my brother more? But you know what? And I'm not trying to say that this was not very difficult, because it was. It was especially difficult on my parents. The hardest thing was watching my parents. But you know what? I can't tell you how many people who have contacted me who have had thoughts of suicide and have read my articles, mm-hmm. and have been helped by it. In fact, I had a man just a week or two ago say he read my article. He contacted me and wanted to talk to me on Facebook. Wow. He asked me to call him, and I did. And so here is the idea behind all this. God is so good that he can bring good out of what appears to be real evil. And that's that theodicy, maybe a good God would not necessarily want to eliminate evil. Now, I haven't raised the question of omnipotence, that he can do anything. I don't think that Christian theism would define omnipotence as that God can do anything. There are things God cannot do. He cannot create a square circle. God cannot do the logically impossible, right? He can't make a square circle. He can't create married bachelors. You could even ask the question, could God create genuinely free agents who would never choose their freedom to rebel? I mean, that is a debated issue, but it's still an issue that, look, if God gives people choice, you know, they may misuse them. I think about it very interesting today. In Europe and in America, there are questions about, will people use their freedom to rebel against the constitutional ideas in America? You know, maybe I'll use the Constitution to vote out the Constitution. Well, can you ever create a free creature that may not misuse their freedom? And so the Christian approach to this is, wait a second here. Mackey, I think, has overstated his case. There may be good reason why God doesn't immediately get rid of all evil, because he'd have to get rid of all human beings. He'd have to get rid of all angels. And it could be that there are things God cannot do. But of course, I don't see that as a limitation. Because God cannot do the irrational is not really a limitation upon God.
Yeah.
Let's see where you guys are at with this. What are you thinking at this point?
Well, on the thought that you raised, that you explained a minute ago about God not immediately getting rid of all evil, is there a way for us to look back at some of the evil and see what good might have come out of it? That is, there are a lot of people who like history. You know, I think all three of us are in that category.
Yeah.
Once you start looking at history, it's a mess. It's a lot of wars, a lot of suffering, a lot of slavery. So in your assessment, can we look back at a lot of that and find some good that's come out of it? Or is that a future thing that we may not ever know about?
Yeah, I think a question that tracks right where we're at, Joe. I don't want to be insensitive to people's suffering. One of the reasons I started with my own suffering is just to kind of lay down the premise that I've experienced some evil in my life, some pain and suffering in my life. And I'm not just dismissing that and saying, well, that, you know, get over it. There was a good reason for it. No, I remember after this man attacked my wife, I went into Walter Martin's office. And I told him the story, and I told him, Dr. Martin, I'm struggling with this. You know, he looked at me and smiled, patted me on the back and said, Ken, you did the exact right thing. And, but again, there are people who experience evil, and I don't want to say, well, you know, that's okay because God had a purpose behind it. To live in this world, there can be a lot of suffering and a lot of pain. But now, we can add a couple theological features, Joe. God has decided to not eliminate evil immediately. But the book of Revelation says in the future, he will. The book of Revelation says that he's going to comfort those people. There'll be no more evil. There'll be no more rebellion. There will be no more crying. So while God has decided not to eliminate evil now, he is going to eliminate it in the future. And again, I mean, there are plenty of people who would say, Joe, I'll introduce Aristotle. Aristotle would say that courage is the most important virtue. Aristotle thought if you don't have courage, you really can't have any of the other virtues. So courage is kind of a foundational virtue. But of course, the only way you can develop courage is if you have trial, difficulty, a war, you know, a fight where you have to show some courage. And so the idea here is that God uses these difficult areas of life to build character and to build hope. So he promises he's going to take all those crooked straws. So all of those mass murderers out there, all of those rapists, all of those people who have done evil things and they've never been held accountable, your day's coming. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a judgment day that is going to hold all that accountable. And of course, my response is, you better repent and believe the gospel, because you don't want to stand before God without a savior, without a mediator.
Yeah. I have a question, Ken. I think it's an, I'd like to know how you answer in the new age. When we all, the next age that we live in, where we're believers and receive salvation, I presume that we'll have free will, but yet we're not going to choose evil. Why? If God didn't do it now, why? How's he going to do it later?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's very appropriate for what we're talking about here. I mean, some people would raise the question, can God create a human being that has real volition, yet will never exercise that volition? So then the question you've raised is, well, in the future, when we have moved beyond justification and sanctification and are now glorified, now stand in the presence of God, is he going to transform us morally to the place where we won't rebel against him? Well, I guess I would say a couple things to that, Dave. One, I would say, is this the best possible world? I would say no, but it's the path to the greatest possible world. That is maybe when we think about God creating this world and people say, hey, look, it's not very perfect. I mean, I was hiking last night, and I saw this pretty little bunny rabbit. You know, he was had gray fur and a white tail, and he's just popping around like he was having fun, you know, maybe a little snack right before bedtime. But a little bit later, I saw a snake, and I was thinking, man, you know, predation doesn't make me feel very good. I don't like the idea that I'm somebody's lunch. But I look at nature and it's like, wow, the circle of life, everybody's somebody's lunch. And I'm thinking, is this the best, I thought to myself, Lord, is this the best you can do? I mean, why not something else? Some people, Dave, would say, this is not the best possible world, but it is the foundation for what will become the greatest possible world. And of course, would it be the greatest possible world if Jesus never died for people's sins? I mean, some people would say, this is a pretty rough world. I mean, look at church history. Dave, remember when I recommended you read that book on church history, Shelley's book?
Right.
And you read it and you said, what a mess.
What a mess.
Well, I agree. I think that's right. I mean, I think every day on Sunday morning when you go to church, I think you ought to remind yourself that the Lord's church is, it's a hurting church.
Pretty messed up.
It's a messed up church. It's a broken, scarred church.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for a perfect church, you'd spoil it by being there.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen in the future, which is really your question, Dave, I think that redemption is greater than creation. What I mean by that is I think the state of redemption takes the created order and perfects it. So Adam and Eve were created good. The world was created good. It's a fallen world, a broken world, but the final step in redemption is going to have human beings where they will be fully good and will never exercise their will to do evil. I guess what I'm saying, Dave, is we have to become like God.
Yeah, well, the way I kind of think about it is that now we have human nature, but it's a created human nature. When we're born again, we now become partakers of the divine nature.
Right.
And so we have God's nature, so we can have freedom, but be righteous.
And interestingly, guys, as we talk about Christendom, as we talk about Christian responses, remember in Eastern Orthodoxy, their prism of redemption is not penal substitution, justification, the courtroom, a judge acquitting like Catholics and Protestants are so used to. There's this theosis that God is transforming us to be like his son. And so that idea is there. Of course, we would talk about kind of full sanctification or glorification. I think that's what people would say. Now, let me come back to some of these quotations, if I could. Again, this is Augustine. He says, God judged it better to bring good out of evil than to suffer no evil to exist. God in his wisdom, in his providence, who is all powerful, all good, a perfect being, a maximally perfect being, he judged it better to bring good out of evil than to suffer evil to exist. He says again, St. Augustine, for the Almighty God, who, as even the heathen acknowledge, has supreme power over all things, being himself supremely good, would never permit the existence of anything evil among his works if he were not so omnipotent and good that he can bring good out of evil. So this was an issue even in Augustine's time, right? We see right there, God's all powerful, God's all good, but there's evil. So this question has been around a long time. How about some contemporary Christian thinkers kind of weighing in here? Well, here's Richard Swinburne, professor at Oxford. Most of his life he was an Anglican. Later in life he converted to Eastern Orthodoxy, but Swinburne is considered not only one of the finest Christian philosophers, I think he's considered one of the finest philosophers in the world. And I can tell you, it encourages me to know that as a philosopher myself, that there are really some great philosophers out there who share my faith. Just like Dave, I think it's encouraging to you that there are some really fine scientists who share your faith. Yeah. You know, they come from your background, they have your training, and they agree with you, right? Well, here's Swinburne on the problem of evil. He says, the basic solution is that all of the evils we find around us are logically necessary conditions of greater goods. That is to say that the greater good couldn't come without the evil, or at any rate, the natural possibility of evil. So there you have Swinburne not only presenting the greater good idea, but telling us that that these evils are necessary conditions for greater good. So develop the virtue of courage without opportunities that arise that demand. When that man attacked my wife, I thought to myself, it's now you or me, and it's not going to be me. If one of us is going to go tonight, it's going to be you. Hmm. I didn't stop and think, well, I might get hurt. I just thought about my wife. I'm going to get this man away from my wife. And then whatever happens between me, him and me, that's between him and me. I also didn't stop and think, well, let me reflect about this issue. let me philosophize about this issue. I just went into Rambo, right? Here's a quotation from another philosopher. And I have to tell you, I really like Paul Copan. He has influenced my writing. If you read my books, you'll almost always see quotations from Paul Copan. In my latest manuscript, he helped me a lot when it came to both the issue of slavery and the issue of God allegedly committing genocide against the Canaanites. So I like Paul Copan. He's spoken at RTB events. This is what Paul says. He says, perhaps this world has the balance of the greatest amount of good and the least amount of evil. Because if you step outside the deductive problem of evil, then you come to the inductive problem of evil. Okay, maybe there isn't a tension that rules out God, an all-powerful, all-loving God because of evil. But even if you get out of that difficulty, why is there so much evil in the world? So Paul Copan says, perhaps, I mean, after all, God is the creator. He is infinitely wise and prudent. He knows all things. He's maximally perfect. Perhaps this world, Paul Copan says, has the balance of the greatest amount of good and the least amount of evil. I mean, who would know that other than a perfect being?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Now let me add one more element here. What do the atheists say about Mackey's deductive problem of evil? Well, I don't think Mackey ever gave it up. I think Mackey thought that when you try to do what Plantica does or Swinburne does or St. Augustine does or Ken Samples in this program, I think he thought, you have to define omnipotence as he can do anything. And if he's good, he would be the opposite of evil and he'd get rid of it. So I don't know that Mackey ever
acknowledged
or accepted the subtleties of the Christian position. But let me quote some really good philosophers who are not believers. William Rowe, spelled last name R-O-W-E. I read Rowe many years ago. Rowe is perhaps an agnostic, maybe an atheist. The reason I say that is whenever he wrote, you could never kind of track him down. I thought he was so fair-minded, so careful, you could never know exactly where he was coming from. And by the way, that's the way I was taught. My early philosophy professors, they thought it was wrong for them to tell me what they believed or try to persuade me to believe what they believed. They wanted to present every view as if they were totally behind it. But here's what William Rowe, who's a philosopher of religion, he says, some philosophers have contended that the existence of evil is logically inconsistent with the existence of the theistic God. And that he's talking Mackey's language, right? That some philosophers have contended that the existence of evil is logically inconsistent with the existence of a theistic God. He then concludes, no one, I think, has succeeded in establishing such an extravagant claim. So William Rowe, even as a non-Christian, says, no, I don't think Mackey succeeded. I think Augustine, Swinburne, Plantica have real responses. Then another philosopher who is either an agnostic or an atheist, Paul Draper, he's very capable. He's living today. I'm not sure Rowe is still living. He may have passed away, but Paul Draper is a top-notch philosopher. He says in a paper, The Argument from Evil, he says, I do not see how it is possible to construct a convincing logical argument from evil against theism.
Wow.
Pretty strong. I think it is fair to say, Joe and Dave, that Christian philosophers of religion, like Swinburne, like Plantica, like William Lane Craig, like Paul Copan, and of course, all these great thinkers from the past, St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, that they have made a case that even non-believers accept, that you really don't succeed in a deductive argument that says that evil is logically inconsistent with evil. Now, don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean that skeptics have stopped raising the problem of evil. They may say, for example, okay, I accept that God may have a good reason for allowing it, but why so much of it? Then we move to another angle. Or they may say, why is there so much evil in nature? I like to say, and I think I got this really from Paul Copan, I like to say that there isn't one problem of evil. There are multiple problems of evil. It's kind of like Hinduism. There are many religions within Hinduism. There's pantheism, there's monotheism, there's polytheism. You might say that the problem of evil is a many splintered thing.
I want to especially emphasize what you just did, that what we're talking about here is logically consistent argument. In other words, there's no deductive logical argument like Mackey has attempted to do to prove that God cannot exist. But there may be other arguments that appeal not to to logic, but appeal to persuasiveness or to emotion or to other aspects of our being that result in a person still being an atheist.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, one of the things that we've been doing for a couple years now is every once in a while, we bring the problem of evil back again. And we try to respond to it from different points of view. And the reason I think that's appropriate is it never goes away. Even though I think Augustine has some powerful answers, even though I think today Swinburne, Plantica, Bill Craig, Paul Copan have really good answers, it never goes away. And sometimes, Dave, it becomes very emotional. I mean, you know somebody who has had great suffering. A lot of times you need to take your apologetic hat off and put it on the table and put your cap of being empathetic and sympathetic. You need to comfort people and encourage them and tell them, hey, you're not alone. You're not alone in this. There are people here who are going to help you. So, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I was thinking of this, that it's people like Mackey who have raised questions that to some degree may have made philosophers like Swinburne and Plantica what they are. They were young philosophers when Mackey came along. You know, Mackey was an established philosopher. Swinburne and Plantica had to wrestle with those issues. And in many ways, Mackey spurred them on to writing some of the things that we do. Sometimes it's the skeptics. Sometimes it's the non-believers that motivate Christians to extend themselves and answer things. St. Augustine was a Manichaean, and the Manichaeans said, God created evil. So that, when he became a Christian, he began working on that. Okay, how do I respond to that? Same is true for Thomas Aquinas. Could I mention Hugh Ross? I mean, I think much of the ministry of Hugh Ross is he was trained in the scientific environment. He knows the things that bother scientists. He knows the secular scientists. And I mean, here you have a guy who's presenting a scientific model. You know, he's not just responding here and there. He says what we need is a scientific model that is compatible with Christian theism. He's using his training in science and his awareness. This is the way scientists think. So this is what the church needs. You know, God brings good out of evil. I've had the opportunity to talk to people who have had bad experiences like I have. And sometimes I've been able to say, you know what? You're not alone. I've experienced that too. Mm-hmm. And I know how hard it is, but you're going to get through it. And the Lord loves you and he cares for you. So, you know, these are important issues, I think, that we need to wrestle with. So this is one aspect of the problem of evil. And Joe and Dave, we'll come back to this again.
Yeah,
there'll be other areas.
One of the common arguments that's used today is that, okay, evil exists. Maybe you can make a case for an argument that God would allow it, but they're often attacking the God that's described, for instance, specifically in the Old Testament as himself being evil.
Yeah. I'm glad you raised that. You know, this book manuscript that I've worked on, Dave, you were one of the reviewers that went through it and offered me good insight how to make the book better. I think it's interesting that in the last 30 years, you know, I've been doing apologetics for about 33 years professionally, and I often say that when I first was engaged in apologetics, particularly with college students, they were mostly interested in truth questions. Does God, is Jesus the Son of God? Was he raised from the dead? I would say over the last 15 years, though, or so, when I talk to college students, they have different kinds of questions. They're asking, is God good? Hey, wait a second here. If I were to adopt Christianity, you know, why did God command the destruction of the Canaanites? Or why is church history so messy? Why didn't Christians 2,000 years ago just overcome slavery? And so I think that while the new atheists are not nearly as substantive as the old atheists, people like J.L. Mackey, people like A.J. Ayer, people like Bertrand Russell, Jean-Paul Sartre, etc., I do think that the new atheists have been very successful in kind of challenging the goodness of God. They haven't been very good at showing God doesn't exist, but they have made accusations about God's goodness. And the reason, even if you accept the idea that the new atheism is not really something that was successful or we should significantly respond to, I think they have so many followers. And I think within our context of today, where you have lots of people asking questions about the goodness of the past, American goodness, the goodness of the Judeo-Christian view, Dave, I think you're right. I think we need to answer truth questions, and I think we need to answer questions about the goodness of God.
Well, thank you for your comment. For me, I'm sure Dave would echo that, and our listeners. So thanks for bringing it to our attention. And as you mentioned, you're going to broach this topic from time to time because it is one of those prime topics of discussion, a major objection to the faith. Ken, you mentioned earlier that article that you wrote and which somebody contacted you over. So I just want to remind people that you write blogs all the time, and people can find out what's on your mind by checking out Reflections. It's reflectionsbyken.wordpress.com. You've also written a number of books. I think this topic comes up in which book is it again?
I address this primarily in two books, Without a Doubt, which was very early back in 2004, and in Seven Truths That Changed the World, which came out in 2012.
Right. Yeah. And as you mentioned in your upcoming book, you're going to talk about more related topics. So we could look forward to that. Be sure to share the link, and thanks for hanging in there with us. You can reach Ken and offer questions or feedback at RTB_KSamples. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. For Ken Samples and Dave Rogstad, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory, but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Straight Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.